Ephesians chapter 6, beginning with verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee and thou mayest live long on the earth. Now, we'd like to have exactly what the Lord promises here. I mean, to live long, and not just to live long, but to live long while living well. So that as we look back on life after many years of living, we say, you know, like the song we sometimes sing, it's well with my soul. Well, this is a promise that God has made. And God has made lots of promises in the Scripture. And God has had millennia of ages in which to show us that He keeps His promises. Whatever He promises us, you can take that to the bank. You can count on what He promises. And this is, as Paul reminds us, out of those Ten Commandments that Moses wrote down from God there in Exodus, out of those ten, the first one has no promise, the second one has no promise, the third one has no promise, and you don't get into a promise until you get down to this one right here, for God attaches a promise to that. Out of the Ten Commandments, there's only one that has a promise attached to it, and that's this one right here. It would seem that God is saying to us, don't pass by this lightly. Doing this one thing will have a very positive impact upon your life today and in whatever todays you have left. And what He's bidding us do is to honor our father and our mother. And dads, I'm going to let you slip off to the side and we'll talk about honoring our mother just for a little while this morning. It's more important sometimes than we actually realize. What Julia Ward Howe pursued back in the 1870s, at whatever point in time it crossed her brain that something should be special, done special for her mama and for the other mamas in the world of her generation. So she began a movement within her state to try and, you know, set aside a day of some kind in this state to honor our moms. And so she pursued that for a long time. It never got as much water or weight as it needed to get much of any distance until about 35 years later. And that was Anna Jarvis of West Virginia, who began to push again for the same thing, to say it's a worthwhile date to set aside to recognize the mothers in our nation. And so she worked her wonders with those that had some clout, with people who had some clout, so that in 1914, a joint resolution was proposed in Congress. Woodrow Wilson signed it on May the 9th. It set aside the second Sunday of May, and this is the second Sunday of May, that we would say to our mothers, thank you. It's perfectly all right to say that the other 51 Sundays of the year, but to forget to say it today is unforgivable. So whether your mother is here with us today, or whether she is somewhere else located in this nation, or whether, as many of us this morning, if we want to go visit our mama, we have to go to the cemetery. Whatever the case is, when we think about our mama, I hope the memories that you have are those that make you smile a little, that will take you back to another time in your life, to a woman who lived her life as best she could in the environment and workplace where she found herself, with the family that God gave her. She lived her life as best she could to raise her children and hopefully to honor God. It's Mother's Day. We sometimes ask the question, where would we be without mothers? And that's kind of a silly question. We know that. I know where we'd be this morning if every mother that we have in the building this morning decided, you know, this would be a good day to sleep in. I'm a little bit weary. We wouldn't have much of attendance today if no mothers were here. We take things for granted. We tend to live life in a rush here in the year 2018. That's nothing new. Not that folks didn't rush around in the 1920s. Humanity has always been in a hurry to do something or another. And because we get in a hurry, we pass by too quickly things that we ought to be noticing. We get in our cars to take a road trip somewhere, and we said, here's where we're starting, and here's our destination, and here's the amount of mileage, and here's the time that we're allotting to get there. And we set our bead down, our eyes directed down the road, and we go. And too often we forget to look and to really deal with the reality that, you know, this, it's about the journey as much as it is about the destination. And so we fail to see some of the things that we probably ought to be noticing. That's true in this church, you know. This is a wonderful church, full of wonderful people that are doing the best they can in the situation they have with the circumstances that God has provided for them to live to His honor. We have a wonderful Savior there every day, every moment of every hour of every day. He is present to hear us when we call. We have the Scriptures, that any time we are so moved, we can seek the counsel of God and know that that counsel is good. And we have mothers that perhaps of all the things that we mentioned, they are quite often taken for granted more than anything else. You know, Klein Padden used to be, I don't know if any of y'all have heard of him or not, or care or not, but he used to be the director of the Sunset School of Preaching back years and years ago, and he felt like it would be an inappropriate thing for any young guy to come through the School of Preaching and not have a Mother's Day sermon outline, because Mother's Day comes up every year and it needs to be prepared with something. So he gave them this outline to take with them to preach on Mother's Day. And he used the word mother, and taking each of the letters in the word mother, he gave it a meaning, and he said, here's your sermon. M in mothers is for the many things that your mothers do for you. O in mothers is for the other things that your mothers do for you. And T is for the thousands of things beyond those things which your mother does for you. And H is for the hundreds more that she's done for you that you're already forgetting about. And E is for everything beyond those things. And R is for the rest of the stuff that you've passed over and forgotten. And S in mothers is shall we stand and sing. Now, if I'd preached that sermon this morning, I would have been a popular guy. She's done more than we know. She did a lot of that for you when you were so little you couldn't know. you just couldn't. And so your memories date back to a certain point in time in history, but they don't go back beyond that time. And she invested a lot of energy, a lot of prayers, a lot of worrying about you in that early time. We have mothers all over the Bible to encourage us. We've got Eve, where Moses tells us early in the book of Genesis, in writing the book, that she was the mother of all living in Genesis 3 and verse 10. And indeed she was the mother of all living. She had two boys that she loved like you would love two boys that you had. Cain was the oldest, and he came to this world, and she loved Cain with every ounce of her mother's heart. And Abel was born not too long thereafter, and she loved Abel. And she saw to their raising. She fed them. She clothed them. She rocked them, if you will. She nursed them when they were sick, and they grew up to become men. Now, of the children that these two first sons that Eve had, one of them turned out great. The other was a rascal. Now, if a mother's love, you know, Cain killed Abel, his own brother. If a mother's love could have prevented that, then it would never have occurred. She would have, with her love, she would have built a hedge about them, and there wouldn't be anything this evil that could possibly have gotten into their lives. But she wasn't the only one that was having a choice in what was going to go on in their lives, you see. So Cain got angry. Jealous. And he slew Abel as they were walking by the way. That was a hard deal for Adam and Eve. She had lots of other kids, but nobody can replace the child that you lose. She had Seth next. Seth was a good one. And then she went on having children. She and Adam did. You know, if she had tried to set a place at her supper table for all the children that she had, she'd have to rent a banquet hall that was really big. Because for 800 more years, excuse me on that microphone, 800 more years, she and Adam had sons and had daughters. And she was a mother to all of those children. doing the best that she could.
Samson's mama, you've read about her in the Old Testament,
but you don't know her name. You know that her husband's name was Manoah, and you know that both of them wanted a child, and specifically they wanted a son, and you know that they were struggling with that issue, and God said, you know, okay. You're going to have a son. And he said, but I'm going to tell you this about this boy. He's going to be a Nazarite from his birth, and you have to be busy raising him the right way, because I've got great things in mind for Samson. And so she set herself to that task. She began disciplining herself from the time she got that message. No wine, the Lord told her. No unclean food. The mother had to take care of herself. And she accepted that discipline, and Samson was born, and everything was great for a while. And if he'd listened to his mama, which he didn't, he would have lived long on this earth, and things would have gone well with him. His life was cut short in an unanticipated death. And it was a horrible loss for his parents and for Israel. And if a mother's love could prevent those kinds of things coming to children, Samson would have been a different guy. They asked the Lord specifically, we don't have any kids. We don't know how to raise this boy. Would you please teach us? And God taught them how to raise him. Samson had his own opinion about things, and so things did not go well. But she was the best mama to him that she could possibly be. Moses, great leader of God, deliverer of the children of Israel out of bondage. His mother had two children before him. She had Miriam, and Miriam was about 10 years of age when Moses was born. She had Aaron, who was about 3.5 years old when Moses was born. And the decree had already gone out from Pharaoh. They were going to kill all these Israeli children. Any sons that are born, they're getting too populated, and they were a little bit afraid of the population. So we're just going to start knocking them off. And so she kept her pregnancy hid, which is not an easy task. And when he was delivered for 3 months, she concealed his birth until she couldn't keep it hidden any longer. She was a slave, as was her husband. And so she, you know, we speak about Noah and the ark that he built. It was quite an ark. But if someone asks you about who else built an ark in the Bible, you'd say, I don't know. Probably. She built an ark. The only other person in your Bible that built an ark. Now, it wasn't this big thing that housed all the animals. It was a little bitty thing that housed one baby. But the Bible calls it an ark that she built. And it was made out of green stuff, you know, found along the edge of the river. And she stitched all those things together, and she pitched it inside and out with pitch, with tar, just like Noah did. And she put her baby boy in that. I don't know what her name is Jochebed. I don't know what Jochebed and Amram, Moses' dad, named him. And neither do you. For 3 months, they raised him and loved him, and the time came to put him in that ark. Attached Miriam close by to watch what happened with that ark, and she knew exactly where she placed it. She wasn't a stupid woman. She placed it where Pharaoh's family, daughters, where they went to the river to bathe regularly, their swimming hole, if you will, and sure enough, they saw it, or she saw it, the daughter did, and sent one of her maidens or servants out to fetch it, and she just thought that child was adorable, and she just decided, we'll take this child home with us, and this will be my son. And so Miriam went running up, and you know the story goes, and Miriam said, you're going to need somebody to wet nurse this boy, aren't you? She said, well, yeah, I guess I am. And she said, do you want me to find you somebody? And she said, yeah, among the Israelites. And said, yeah. And so she went and got Jochebed. And Jochebed went to Pharaoh's house and lived there. So that you understand the price that she paid in order to be with Moses, she had to give up her husband Amram, and she had to give up further help with raising Miriam and further help with raising Aaron, who was a little 3-year-old running around the house, so that she could go and live in Pharaoh's house and take care of Moses. And she made that sacrifice for Moses. And Amram made that sacrifice. He lost his wife for years while she went to live in Pharaoh's house. And she did that because she loved Moses, and she loved Miriam, and she loved Aaron, and she did the best that she could in the circumstances that she found herself in to take care of the children that she loved. Quite a lady. Moses came to be something very special. You know the choice that he made in Hebrews chapter 11, that he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. You know that he turned his back on all the riches and the wealth of Egypt. And if you consider what he turned his back on for what he embraced, he gave up all of that wealth and that power, and he was a general in Pharaoh's army. He had been educated in the best of Egyptian colleges. He was a leader. He had won battles. And he turned away from all of that to embrace the life of a slave, and to flee because of the criminal charge of murder that was against him. Now, how in the world, or why in the world, would he do that? He'd been taken daily to the Egyptian schools. He'd worshipped on the proper dates, which was a Friday for them to worship the Egyptian gods. And because Jochebed had made a decision about intervening in his life. And in the quiet times they had together, she told him about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and the God of those great patriarchs of old, and she reminded him of stories that he had never heard. And he listened to those stories and he thought about those stories, so that when the time came and he had to choose between his Egyptian culture and his Hebrew heritage, he said, "I believe I'll go with God." And later on, when it came time for him to climb Sinai and he had let God, or God had written those commandments down on those tables of stone and with his finger, and later on Moses threw those down because he was angry, and he had to go back up the mountain and he had to do those himself with a hammer and a chisel. And we came to that one, they chiseled in there. I think he made it a little deeper than the rest. Honor thy mother. And I am confident Moses did that all of his life. Mary is a woman, of course, in the scriptures that we're very familiar with, and the choices that she made. And when the angel told her, you know, according to Isaiah 7, the virgin will conceive and be with the child, and congratulations, Mary, you're that virgin, and you're not married, and people are going to talk about you, accuse you of being a runaround. And she said, "Don't think that's for me." No, she said, "I am my Lord's handmaiden. Be it unto me according to your will." And so she went through the embarrassment and the accusations and whispers behind her back. She told others of the story about this immaculate conception, and they didn't believe a word of it. But she knew that Jesus was going to be special, and she hung around. In all the years in the carpenter shop, she was there. When Jesus entered into his ministry, she was there. At his first miracle in Cana of Galilee, she was there. She continued to be there during the next 3 years of Jesus' life. And when he came to Jerusalem for that final Passover, she was there. And he was taken before the high priest and abused at the hands of the Sanhedrin, and then taken to Pilate and abused at the hands of Pilate. You can't find her specifically unless you find her by faith. But understand this, she was there. When he was nailed upon the cross, Jesus had that very brief conversation with John about his mother, because his mother was there. Peter and Andrew and James and all the rest of them had said, "Lord, don't go to Jerusalem." And he said, "Well, I've got to go because I've got to die." And they said, "All right, we're going with you, and we'll just die with you." And none of them did. They couldn't even hang around after the Garden of Gethsemane to stay with him. But Mary could, because Mary, you see, was his mama. And there is a bond between a mother and her children. My earliest church memory is of Mama carrying me out of church down there when the Worship Church was meeting in the old community building. And that's the earliest memory I've got of that church, and the earliest memory I've got of my mama. And she wasn't carrying me out to bless me. Believe it or not, I was not behaving myself properly in that church. And I think often about her life. She had five little ones by the time I was old enough to know how I should have behaved in church. Baby sister Kay hadn't been around very long. But there were five of us, and we were all young kids and growing up on that old farm. And, you know, there were cows to be milked every morning. Cows didn't care what day of the week it was. When it came morning time, they needed to be milked. And so there were cows to be milked and chores to be done. And five kids to get fed, and she couldn't just tell us to run into the pantry and get some Pop-Tarts to eat, because there wasn't any pantry and there wasn't any Pop-Tarts. If you were going to have breakfast, you had biscuits and gravy and whatever could be cooked on the stove, and there were dishes to wash. We didn't have any paper plates to eat off of, so you washed the same dishes that you ate off of after every meal. And there was all of that to do, and kids to get ready and to get cleaned up and get to church. And then when she got to church, she took care of five kids. Some of us little old Biddy and Andre. Because Daddy couldn't do that, because he was up front teaching class and he was up front leading singing, and so they never sat together. Mama sat back somewhere, and we kind of straggled out through church where we could, sometimes with grandparents or aunts. Her day would have been a lot easier without church. But she was always there, and the doors were open.
Both my grandmothers, and I know I'm blessed,
were always in church. I can see that little auditorium and see where all of them sat. Mama and her mama and my daddy's mama sitting in church. Many of my aunts also sitting in that little assembly. And out of that group of women that were so influential within my life, never cussing, never saw them with a cigarette in their hand or a glass of beer or a glass of wine in their hand, none of that in the house. Never heard them screaming and yelling and fighting. No hitting. Because that was a group of mamas, like the mamas we have in this auditorium this morning, that wanted good things for their kids and did the best they could in that generation, in those circumstances, to help their kids grow up to be decent people. Listen. Kids, your mama wants one thing for you. If she's troubled herself enough to be here this morning, she wants one thing for you, and that is your life given to God. And there's not anything else that you can give her that could possibly make up for an absence of that. That is enough for her. And the only thing children, if they're Christian children, want for their mama is that her mama is dedicated to God. It's the same thing the Lord wants. It's why He told us to honor our father and our mother. He reminded us that this is the first commandment that I'm giving you, to which I attach a promise. And the promise is still just as good today. God bless mothers. God bless you. We'll sing an invitation song now. If you're here and not a Christian, this is your opportunity to come and to make that kind of commitment to the Lord in repentance of sin. We'll baptize you into Christ this morning for the remission of those sins, and every sin will be washed away and you become part of God's family. If you need our prayers, we stand ready to assist. You come while we stand and sing. First and last day.